broadcasting to the worldwide Freedom Radio Network. All affiliate stations and listeners, please take note of the following scheduling changes for the worldwide Freedom Radio Network programming. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m., the hour of the time, with yours truly, William Cooper. Monday through Friday this week, and beginning again the week after next, 7 to 11 p.m., all oldies and special programming. Monday through Friday, 11 to 12 p.m., the hour of the time, rerun from earlier that same day. Monday and Tuesday nights, 9 until 10 p.m., Quest for Health with Michael Cottingham. Thursdays, 9 to 11 p.m., Home Satellite Radio Show with Dan Morgan. And Saturdays, 11 p.m. until 1 a.m., American Exposé with Chris Gerner.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time. Ladies and gentlemen, the Hour of the Time is carried by over 700 affiliate stations of the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, many on low power FM. It is carried on WRMI 9.955 megahertz worldwide shortwave radio, Monday through Friday, 6 until 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It is on satellite GE1, the most powerful satellite in the sky, almost directly overhead. Transponder 7, 7.56 audio. As we continue to expand our reach all the time. The Worldwide Freedom Radio Network is expanding its programming schedule, as many of you have already learned. And that will continue as long as the listening audience and affiliate stations continue to do their part. One of the things that you can do is call Southwest International Trading at 1-800-295-2432. That's 1-800-295-2432, and ask how you can obtain the Economic Survival Pack number 1 for the ridiculously low price of only $250. Remember, every dollar you spend with Southwest International Trading contributes money directly to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network so that we can continue to expand our broadcasting until we reach either the break-even point or 24-hour-a-day coverage worldwide, whichever comes first. And that's all we want to do, folks. That's the goal. We have also signed a contract with a long-distance telephone carrier. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't care who you have your telephone long distance hooked up with, I'm pretty sure we can save you money. We can bring your rate down to at least 10 cents a minute, 24 hours a day, every day of the week, every month, all year, and it doesn't cost you a thing. There's no fee to switch. There are no monthly payments except your regular telephone bill. You only pay what you use. And that's 10 cents a minute. So call us at 520-333-4578. Tell us what your rate per minute is. And if we can save you money, we encourage you to switch over to our new carrier. And if we can't, we'll tell you. We can't save you money. Stay with whoever you're with, because the whole purpose is to help you and help us. If you switch to our carrier, ladies and gentlemen, You will benefit by getting lower long-distance telephone rates. And we will benefit because the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network will earn some money. Not a lot, in fact, very little, but we will earn some money. We're trying our very best to find ways for you to benefit and for the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network to continue to expand its coverage worldwide up until we are able to air the very best programming 24 hours of each day, every day of the week, every week, every month, every year. So you can help by calling tomorrow between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m., and that's Mountain Standard Time or Pacific Daylight Time. It's the same. And It's 12 noon Eastern. So it's 9 Pacific, 12 Eastern. And from 9 until 1 p.m., and that's 4 Eastern, the office will be open. And you can call and talk to Connie, and she'll help you out with this. Okay? I'm going to trust you to do it. Here's the most recent, up-to-date, as of today, schedule for the showing of Waco, The Rules of Engagement. It will be shown at the Cinema Village, 22 East 12th Street, New York, New York. That's between University and 5th Avenue. Extended showings Saturday and Sunday, June 28th and 29th at 12 p.m. The Tower Theater, 876 East 900 South Street, Salt Lake City, Utah. We'll be showing June 20th through the 27th. And so today and tomorrow is your last day to see it there. The Key Theater, 1325 and a half Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C. It will be showing from June 20th through July 3rd. And the Coolidge Corner Theater, 290 Harvard Street, that's 290 Harvard Street, Brookline, Massachusetts. Near the intersection of Beacon and Harvard Streets, Coolidge Corner, and it's showing June 27th, that's tomorrow, through July 4th. The Magic Theater, 107 Argall Way, Nevada City, California, is showing July 4th through July the 11th. The Naro Cinema, spelled N-A-R-O, Naro Cinema, 1503 Colley, spelled C-O-L-L-E-Y Avenue, Norfolk, Virginia, showing July 14th and 15th only. Upstate Films, 26 Montgomery Street, Rhinebeck, New York, will be showing August 9th through the 14th. Cinemaster Theaters, University Village, 1201 University Avenue, Riverside, California, will be showing in September. We do not have the exact dates yet. We will let you know as soon as we do. The Denver Film Festival, it will be showing at the AMC Tivoli, 12 theaters, 9th and Auraria Parkway, Denver, Colorado, showing October 23rd through the 30th. Exact dates during that time will be announced as soon as we have them. Make sure you see this documentary movie, ladies and gentlemen. It will tell you the truth about what happened to Waco, Texas, using the government's own reports, films made by the Branch Davidians over the years and in Mount Carmel during the siege. United States government home movies made by BATF and FBI agents, which show their true agenda, their callousness, and their complete disregard for human life, and many other things. The United States government forward-looking infrared film, which clearly shows that all avenues of escape were blocked except one, and as the Branch Davidians tried to come out, they were mowed down with machine gun fire. This is indisputable proof, ladies and gentlemen, that everything that you heard about Waco is true, except what the United States government told you. And think about it. They say they were only after David Koresh, and only because they thought he had a machine gun. And for that, they spent millions and millions of dollars. Took hundreds of BATF and FBI agents out of their normal crime-fighting roles. They cordoned off a section of Waco, Texas for 59 days. They held literally prisoners under siege, people who had broken no laws and who were not wanted by anybody for anything. Attacked that church firing from helicopters and from jackbooted ninja Nazi thugs on the ground, and eventually gassed and murdered and burned, and then pushed into the ashes all of the evidence with bulldozers and tanks. All of those people, their belongings, their children, their dogs, their toys, their clothing, their home, their church, everything. Don't go away. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be right back after this brief pause.
Glad you could make it. Never in human history has so few taken so much from so many as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took us from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They have foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exported your jobs and surrendered our arms.
They want
a new world order. A new world order. You to be a slave from birth to grave. The banksters own the Federal Reserve. It's private. They own it. It's neither federal nor a reserve. The cashists make that fiat funny money stuff you call dollars for 2 pennies. They lend it back to us at full face value. Then charge you interest. You get the debt. They get the interest. They get the gold. You get the shell. A new world order. A new world order. A new world order.
Oh, yes, these people have been perpetrating the myth that Nazis were right-wing, somehow were conservative people. You know why, ladies and gentlemen? Because the people who are in charge now, destroying this country and the world, who want to enslave the world in a new totalitarian socialist world government, they call the Utopian Golden Dawn. You see it everywhere. You hear it. They are socialists, ladies and gentlemen, Marxist socialists. You know why they want you to think that Hitler was right-wing, that he was conservative? You know why they want you to believe that lie? Because the truth is, ladies and gentlemen, is that Hitler's coming back. It won't look like him, and he'll certainly have a different name, but it'll be Hitler nevertheless, and the Nazis will be in power. You see, Hitler was a Nazi. He socialized Germany. Nazi literally means National Socialist German Workers' Party. You've been scammed. Right wing wants less government, ladies and gentlemen. Most people who masquerade in politics as right-wing are not right-wing. They're socialists in disguise. Haven't you ever wondered? The guy runs for years on the Democratic ticket. The Democrats start losing, and he switches immediately over to the Republican Party, and you're supposed to believe that he's now a Republican. And the Republican leadership keep leading us more and more into socialism. Keep exporting our jobs, destroying this country from within, and you really believe that they're conservative, right-wing Republicans? Not on your life, ladies and gentlemen. Not on your life. Remember, Hitler was a socialist. Nazi means National Socialist German Workers' Party. Understand that. Stop buying the lie. Socialism will enslave the human race. Look at socialism throughout history. socialism is the precursor to communism. This country was founded as a democratic constitutional republic. And the democratic, ladies and gentlemen, was limited. Limited only to the House of Representatives and nothing else. You see, it's really a constitutional republic. It has nothing to do with democratic or democracy. V.I. Lenin, who founded the Soviet Union, said democracy is indispensable to socialism. Haven't you wondered why they stopped calling this a constitutional republic and now everybody calls it a democracy? Well, day one that it actually and really becomes a democracy will be day one in the socialist regime and rule of this country and the world, and it will ultimately fall into communism. That's the ultimate goal. Read Mikhail Gorbachev's Perestroika. He tells you right in there. Read Anatoly Golitsyn's Old Lies for New and the Perestroika Deception. He defected from the Soviet Union as one of the highest-ranking KGB officers who have ever left the Soviet Union, and he told us that all of this was coming, and we ignored him. Who was responsible for ignoring him and convincing everyone in the intelligence community and the United States government that he was not telling us the truth? Why, it was old James Jesus Angleton, ladies and gentlemen. James Jesus Angleton always claimed that there was a Soviet mold deep within the American intelligence community. When you study the life of James Jesus Angleton and study what he did, ladies and gentlemen, you'll find out that James Jesus Angleton was the mole. And his continued harping on trying to find that mole and telling everybody that those who were telling us the truth were liars has brought us into the situation in which we find ourselves today. It was James Jesus Angleton, ladies and gentlemen, who was the Soviet mole in the United States intelligence community. If he had not convinced everybody not to listen to Anatoly Golitsyn, we could have taken measures to stop the socialist takeover of America. And it was James Jesus Angleton who single-handedly convinced the world not to listen to Anatoly Golitsyn. If you go back and look at his testimony, read his works, read his writing, read his confessions of what the KGB and the Soviet Union was really up to, and you will find that he told us long before anybody ever dreamed that anything like that could happen, that it would happen, and that it would be a deception to disarm the West. And it has worked well. And now Washington, D.C., and even your state governments are full of socialists, Marxists, and communists who are destroying this country from within, slowly but surely taking the freedoms from the citizens of the United States of America and of the several states, slowly but surely binding us in economic chains and in chains of bureaucratic paperwork and draconian laws. Justice does not exist anymore in this country, ladies and gentlemen. Show trials prevail. And you are guilty until you can prove yourself innocent, if you can, instead of the way that this justice system was supposed to work in this country, and that is judicially, and that you were innocent until proven guilty. Now you're tried and convicted by the press, and that's it. During the Waco massacre, I heard people who told me that they were God-fearing Christians, Mormons, Pentecostals, Baptists, Jews. Bill, they were just religious fanatics, a bunch of religious fanatics. They deserved exactly what they got. Forgetting, evidently, that their ancestors came to this country to escape religious persecution. And that this country is the country that took in the Jews and the persecuted peoples and religions of the world and gave them succor and shelter and opportunity and the ability to rise to the pinnacle whatever they were capable of achieving. These same children of those people have no idea what destruction they wreak when they say they were just a bunch of religious fanatics. They deserved what they got. We're in big trouble here, ladies and gentlemen. Big trouble. And I think you had better grab hold of your pants and pull them up and recognize what that trouble is and help those of us who are trying to solve these problems to do it. But first you have to wake up. You have to stop denying that there's a problem. You all feel it in your gut. You know it. You know it. Our society, ladies and gentlemen, has reached a pinnacle of self-expression and respect for individuality that's rare or unmatched in the entire history of the world. Our whole popular culture, from fashion magazines to the cinema, positively screams the matchless worth of the individual and glories in eccentricity, nonconformity, independent judgment, and self-determination. This enthusiasm is reflected in the prevalent notion that helping someone entails increasing that person's self-esteem. That if a person properly values himself, he will naturally be a happy, productive, and in some inexplicable fashion, responsible member of society. And yet, while people are encouraged to revel in their individuality and incalculable self-worth, the media, the communist news networks, and the law enforcement establishment continually advise us that when confronted with the threat of lethal violence, we should not resist, but simply give the attacker what he wants. If the crime under consideration is rape, there is some notable waffling on this point, and the discussion quickly moves to how the woman can change her behavior to minimize the risk of rape and the various ridiculous non-lethal weapons she may acceptably carry, such as whistles, keys, mace, or that weapon which really sends shivers down a rapist's spine, the portable cellular phone. What nonsense. How can this be? How can a person who values himself so highly calmly accept the indignity of a criminal assault? How can one who believes that the essence of his dignity lies in his self-determination passively accept the forcible deprivation of that self-determination? How can he quietly, with great dignity and poise, simply hand over the goods? The assumption, ladies and gentlemen, of course, is that there is no inconsistency. The advice not to resist a criminal assault and simply hand over the goods is founded on the notion that one's life is of incalculable value and that no amount of property is worth it. Now put aside for a moment the outrageousness of the suggestion that a criminal who prefers lethal violence should be treated as if he has instituted a new social contract, in effect. I will not hurt or kill you if you give me what I want. Just give me what I want, and I won't hurt you, I won't kill you, I won't rape you, I'll let you go. For years, feminists have labored to educate people that rape is not about sex, but about domination, degradation, and control. Now, evidently, somebody needs to inform the law enforcement establishment and the communist news networks that kidnapping, robbery, carjacking, and assault are not about property. None of these criminals ever end up keeping that property. And kidnapping is it about property? Crime is not only a complete disavowal of the social contract, ladies and gentlemen, but it's also a commandeering of the victim's person and liberty. That if the individual's dignity lies in the fact that he is a moral agent engaging in actions of his own will in free exchange with others, then crime always violates the victim's dignity. It is, in fact, ladies and gentlemen, an act of enslavement. Your wallet, your purse, or your car may not be worth your life, but your dignity is, and if it is not worth fighting for, it can hardly be said to exist. So although difficult for the modern man and woman to fathom, it was once widely believed that life was a gift from God. I believe that. that to not defend that life when offered violence was to hold God's gift in contempt. I believe that. To be a coward, I believe that. And to breach one's duty to one's community, and I believe that. A sermon given in Philadelphia in 1747 unequivocally equated the failure to defend oneself with suicide. I quote, "He that suffers his life to be taken from him by one that hath no authority for that purpose, when he might preserve it by defense, incurs the guilt of self-murder, since God hath enjoined him to seek the continuance of his life, and nature itself teaches every creature to defend itself. Try to mug a tiger. When's the last time you saw an elephant mugged? Even a monkey will defend itself against such behavior." Cowardice and self-respect have largely disappeared from public discourse, but not from the reality of public behavior. And in their place, we are offered self-esteem as the bellwether of success and a proxy for dignity. Self-respect implies that one recognizes standards and judges oneself worthy by the degree to which one lives up to them. Self-esteem simply means that one feels good about oneself. Dignity used to refer to the self-mastery and fortitude with which a person conducted himself in the face of life's vicissitudes and the boorish behavior of others. But now, ladies and gentlemen, judging by campus speech codes, dignity requires that we never encounter a discouraging word and that others be coerced into acting respectfully, that is, evidently, on the assumption that we are powerless to prevent our degradation if exposed to the demeaning behavior of others. And nothing could be farther from the truth. These are signposts proclaiming the insubstantiality of our character and the hollowness of our souls. You see, it is impossible to address the problem of rampant crime without talking about the moral responsibility of the intended victim. Crime, ladies and gentlemen, is rampant because the law-abiding, each of us, condone it, excuse it, permit it, submit to it. We permit and encourage it because we do not fight back immediately, then and there, where it happens. And so the criminal is a grave plethora, victims in a bottomless well upon which to draw. Crime is not rampant because we do not have enough prisons, because judges and prosecutors are too soft, because the police are hamstrung with absurd technicalities. The defect is there, ladies and gentlemen, in our character. We are a nation of cowards and shirkers. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Do you feel lucky? How lucky are you? In 1991, when then Attorney General Richard Thornburg released the FBI's annual crime statistics, he noted that it is now more likely that a person will be the victim of a violent crime than that he will be in an auto accident. And despite this, most people readily believe that the existence of the police relieves them of the responsibility to take full measures to protect themselves. The police, however, ladies and gentlemen, as much as you would like them to be, and maybe as much as some of them would like to be, are not personal bodyguards. Rather, they act as a general deterrent to crime, both by their presence and by apprehending criminals after the fact. As numerous courts have held, they have no legal obligation to protect anyone in particular. You cannot sue them for failing to prevent you from being the victim of a crime. And insofar as the police deter by their presence, they are very, very good. Criminals take great pains not to commit a crime in front of a police officer. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, the corollary is that you can pretty much bet your life, and you are all the time, that they won't be there at the moment you actually need them. And in fact, in some communities, after the police are called, it takes as much as an hour and a half for them to arrive at the scene because of the workload that is put upon them. Should you ever be the victim of an assault, a robbery, or a rape, you will find it very difficult to call the police while the act is in progress, even if you are carrying that great weapon of which all criminals are afraid, a portable cellular phone. You really think that they're going to... Mr. Criminal, I have to make a call. Very important call. Oh, okay, but, you know, make it quick, because I got to use the phone booth. Really believe that? I don't think it's going to happen, ladies. And I think they're going to take that phone and probably beat you to death with it. Beat you to death with your own cellular phone. And even if you are quick enough to be able to dial 911 and push the call button before they yank it out of your hands and beat you to death with it, by the time the police get there, ladies and gentlemen, and left bereft, lying in the street, or on the sidewalk, or in your yard, or even in your bedroom. Nevertheless, you might be interested to know how long it takes the police to show up according to official figures. See, you don't have to take my word for it. I don't want you to take my word for it, folks. Department of Justice statistics for 1991 show that for all crimes of violence, only 28% of calls are responded to within 5 minutes. Now, that's responded to. That doesn't mean they've arrived on the scene. That means responded to. That means a call has gone out to some officer who says that he's on the way. That's a response. The idea that protection is a service people can call to have delivered and expect to receive in a timely fashion is often mocked by gun owners who love to recite the challenge, call for a cop, call for an ambulance, and call for a pizza and see who shows up first. It'll be Domino's every time. Pepperoni with extra cheese and tomatoes. The ambulance will be there second, and the police will usually be there third in most major metropolitan areas, ladies and gentlemen. Not all. Not all. And that doesn't go for all police departments and all police across the country. There are some that are right Johnny on the spot. They should be recognized and held up as a bright light for all of the others who either cannot or won't perform or are too overworked and overloaded and understaffed to perform, whatever the situation. Many people deal with the problem of crime, ladies and gentlemen, by convincing themselves that they live, work, and travel only in special crime-free zones. Invariably, they react with shock and hurt surprise when they discover that criminals do not play by the rules and do not respect these imaginary boundaries. If, however, you understand that crime can occur anywhere, at any time, and if you understand that you can be maimed or mortally wounded in mere seconds, you may wish to consider whether you are willing to place the responsibility for safeguarding your life in the hands of others, no matter who they are. And you have to ask yourself right now, ask yourself this question. Is your life worth protecting? Is it? Don't look at me like that. Don't look at your radio like that. Answer the question. Is your life worth protecting? Well, then if so, whose responsibility is it to protect it? There you go again with that dumb look. Looking at your radio as if you never thought about this before. You should have. It's your life. Answer the question. If so, whose responsibility is it to protect your life? That's better. If you believe that it is the police's, not only are you wrong, since the courts universally rule that they have no legal obligation to do so, but folks, you face some difficult moral quandaries. How can you rightfully ask another human being to risk his life to protect yours when you will assume no responsibility yourself? It doesn't even make sense. It's not logical. In fact, it is a stupid expectation. Why would someone else risk their life for you when you are not willing to assume any responsibility for your own life yourself? Because that is his job and we pay him to do it? Is that your answer? Because your life is of incalculable value, but his is only worth the $30,000 salary we pay him if he's lucky enough to live in an area where the taxes will pay that kind of salary? Because I got to tell you, a lot of police officers make a lot less than that, folks. Is your life worth more than theirs? Do you really believe that? If you believe it reprehensible to possess the means and will to use lethal force to repel a criminal assault, how can you call upon another to do so for you? Do you believe that you are forbidden to protect yourself because the police are better qualified to protect you? Because they know what they are doing, but you're a rank amateur? Now, let's put aside that this is equivalent to believing that only concert pianists may play the piano and only professional athletes may play sports. What exactly are these special qualities possessed only by the police and beyond the rest of us mere mortals? One who values his life and takes seriously his responsibilities to his family and community will possess and cultivate the means of fighting back and will retaliate when threatened with death or grievous injury to himself or a loved one. He will never be content to rely solely on others for his safety, or to rely upon them at all, or to think he has done all that is possible by being aware of his surroundings and taking measures of avoidance. So let's not mince words here. You know me, folks. I never mince words. I'll tell you like it is, right in your face. I will make you so angry. You will be livid with rage. But it will be the truth always. Such a person will be armed, will be trained in the use of his weapon, and will defend himself when faced with lethal violence with like force, or whatever is necessary to preserve the lives of himself, his children, his loved ones, his wife, his family, his mother, his father, or his neighbors. That's right, I said his neighbors. That's me, ladies and gentlemen. People who have been to my home know that anybody who ever tries to hurt any member of my family, is going to be hurt more than they ever dreamed. If the dog doesn't rip them to pieces, they will face a plethora of weapons in the hands of myself, my wife, and yes, even my children, who are trained and know how to use weapons properly and know never, ever to point any kind of a weapon, not even a table knife, at any living thing unless they intend to use it. And I have taught them that if they're ever in danger and they intend to use it, don't ever hesitate. Don't ever hesitate at all. Use it with the most lethal force that they can possibly bring to bear. But you see, it probably will never get to that point. Because the dog is so loyal, ladies and gentlemen. and so well trained that he will literally tear any person, whoever threatens this family, to shreds, to pieces. That is his whole mission in life. To be a companion and a pet for the children, and to protect all of the members of the family all of the time. And he does an unbelievable job. Fortunately, ladies and gentlemen, there are means for preserving life and liberty that can be wielded effectively by almost anyone. And one of the best and most easily obtainable, at least for a while, is the handgun. Small and light enough to be carried habitually, lethal, but unlike the knife or sword, not demanding great skill or strength, it truly is the great equalizer, requiring only hand-eye coordination and a modicum of ability to remain cool under pressure. It can be used effectively by the old and the weak against the young and the strong, by the one against the many. The handgun is the only weapon that would give a lone female jogger a chance, any chance at all, of prevailing against a gang of thugs intent upon rape. A teacher, a chance of protecting children at recess from a madman intent on massacring them. If the teachers in Stockton, California had been carrying handguns, most of those children would still be alive today. But you see, the sheeple don't think about that. A family of tourists waiting at a midtown subway station, the means to protect themselves from a gang of teens armed with razors and knives. And most of the time, just the sight of a gun will deter crime immediately. But since we live in a society that by and large outlaws the carrying of arms, we are brought into the fray of the great American gun war, a war that should not even be raging. Gun control is one of the most prominent battlegrounds in our current culture wars. Yet it is unique in the half-heartedness with which our supposedly conservative, you see, I don't think they are at all, leaders and pundits, our so-called conservative elite do battle and have conceded the moral high ground to liberal gun control proponents. It is not a topic often written about with any great fervor by William F. Buckley or Patrick Buchanan. As drug czar, William Bennett advised President Bush to ban assault weapons. Did that stop drugs? Has it stopped drugs? No. Did it slow drugs down? Not in your life. George Will is on record as recommending the repeal of the second article in amendment to the Constitution, and Jack Kemp is on record as favoring a ban on the possession of semi-automatic, quote, assault weapons, end quote. What is an assault weapon, ladies and gentlemen? Are you kidding me? There's no such thing. You see, anything that can be used to assault another person is an assault weapon. If I use a baseball bat, that becomes an assault weapon the moment I use it to assault anybody with. A rock, a knife, a tire iron, my little girl's doll can be an assault weapon. This is a ridiculous term used to propagandize those who believe that it is not only our right but our duty to own weapons, not only to protect ourselves from criminals, but to hunt if we wish, where hunting is right and legal, lawful, but mostly to maintain our freedom and our creator-endowed rights recognized by the Constitution and those first 10 amendments known as the Bill of Rights against anyone who would usurp those rights, against our own government should it become despotic, against any invader or any insurrection, and of course It is the last line of defense by the people if their government or any other government attempts to enslave them. And that is the purpose of the militia, to execute the laws of the Union, to reinstate or reinstall the government should those in government attempt to dismantle it and destroy it from within, as is happening now. The battle for gun rights is one fought predominantly by the common man. The beliefs of both our liberal and conservative elites are, in fact, abetting the criminal rampage through our society. They are fellow conspirators of the criminal. By any rational measure, nearly all gun control proposals are hokum. The Brady Bill, for example, would not have prevented John Hinckley from obtaining a gun to shoot President Reagan. Hinckley purchased his weapon 5 months before the attack, and his medical records could not have served as a basis to deny his purchase of a gun, since medical records are not public documents filed with the police. Similarly, California's waiting period and background check did not stop Patrick Purdy from purchasing the assault rifle and handguns he used to massacre children during recess in a Stockton schoolyard. The felony conviction that would have provided the basis for stopping the sales did not exist because Mr. Purdy's previous weapons violations were plea bargained down from felonies to misdemeanors. And what he used was a semi-automatic rifle, which, in the process of assaulting someone, can legitimately be called an assault weapon, along with a metal comb, which, when used to hit someone over the head with, is an assault weapon. You see, I won't let you get away with anything, nothing at all. By and large, most people are ignorant. Many people are absolutely stupid when it comes to things like this. In the mid-60s, there was a public service advertising campaign targeted at car owners about the prevention of car theft. The purpose of the ad was to urge car owners not to leave their keys in their cars. The message was, quote, "Don't help a good boy go bad," end quote. The implication was that by leaving his keys in his car, the normal law-abiding car owner was actually contributing to the delinquency of minors who, if they just weren't tempted beyond their limits, would be good little boys and girls. Baloney. Now, in those days, people still had a fair sense of just who was responsible for whose behavior, and the ad succeeded in enraging a goodly portion of the populace and was soon dropped because it gave the wrong message. It was telling children that it was okay to be bad if the owner of the car left his keys in the ignition. Nearly all of the gun control measures offered by Handgun Control Incorporated, known as HCI, and its ilk, embody exactly the same philosophy, ladies and gentlemen. They are founded on the belief that America's law-abiding gun owners are the source of the problem. With their unholy desire for firearms, they are creating a society awash in a sea of guns, thereby helping good boys go bad and helping bad boys be badder. This laying of moral blame for violent crime at the feet of the law-abiding and the implicit absolution of violent criminals for their misdeeds naturally infuriates honest gun owners. It's the same as saying, because we have a military force with tanks and guns and machine guns and ships and artillery and bombers and fighters, that it's our fault that another nation obtained those weapons and invaded us. The files of HCI and other gun control organizations are filled with proposals to limit the availability of semi-automatic and other firearms to law-abiding citizens, and barren of proposals for apprehending and punishing violent criminals. It is ludicrous, ladies and gentlemen, to expect that the proposals of Handgun Control Incorporated or any gun control laws will significantly curb crime. In fact, according to Department of Justice and Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, ATF statistics, fully 90% of violent crimes are committed without a handgun, and 93% of the guns obtained by violent criminals are not obtained through the lawful purchase and sale transactions that are the object of most gun control legislation. The fact remains that if a criminal wants a gun, the criminal will get a gun from someone who traffics in illegal guns, who is him or herself also a criminal. Furthermore, the number of violent criminals is minute in comparison to the number of firearms in America, estimated by the BATF, very, very conservative, at about 200 million, and I can tell you that it is much, much more than that. According to them, it's approximately one-third of this 200 million are handguns. With so abundant a supply, there will always be enough guns available for those who wish to use them for nefarious ends, no matter how complete the legal prohibitions against them or how draconian the punishment for their acquisition or use. Ask the Japanese, ask the Irish, ask the English, where it is completely illegal to own such weapons. Criminals still obtain them, still use them, still kill, wound, or maim people with them. No, the gun control proposals of HCI and other organizations are not seriously intended as crime control, ladies and gentlemen. There is an agenda at work here. Gun control, you see, is a moral crusade against a benighted, barbaric citizenry. This is demonstrated not only by the ineffectualness of gun control in preventing crime, and by the fact that it focuses on restricting the behavior of the law-abiding rather than apprehending and punishing the guilty, but also by the execration that gun control proponents heap on gun owners and their evil instrumentality, the National Rifle Association. Gun owners are routinely portrayed as uneducated, paranoid rednecks, fascinated by and prone to violence. In effect, exactly the type of person who opposes the liberal agenda and whose moral and social re-education is the object of liberal Marxist-socialist policies. Typical of such bigotry is New York Governor Mario Cuomo's famous characterization of gun owners as, quote, hunters who drink beer, don't vote, and lie to their wives about where they were all weekend, end quote. Similar vituperation is rained upon the National Rifle Association, characterized by Senator Edward Kennedy as the pusher's best friend, lampooned in political cartoons as standing for the right of children to carry firearms to school, and in general portrayed as standing for an individual's God-given right to blow people away at will. All lies, all propaganda, all absolutely ludicrous in light of the real facts and the statistics that show just the opposite is true. The stereotype is, of course, false. As criminologist and constitutional lawyer Don B. Cates, Jr., and former HCI contributor Dr. Patricia Harris have pointed out, studies consistently show that, on the average, gun owners are better educated and have more prestigious jobs than non-owners. Later studies show that gun owners are less likely than non-gun owners to approve of police brutality, violence against dissenters, etc. Conservatives must understand that the antipathy many liberals have for gun owners arises in good measure from their status utopianism. This habit of mind has nowhere been better explored than in the Republic. There, Plato argues that the perfectly just society is one in which an unarmed people exhibit virtue by minding their own business in the performance of their assigned functions, while the government of philosopher kings, above the law and protected by armed guardians, unrequesting in their unquestioning in their loyalty to the state, engineers, implements, and fine-tunes the creation of that society, aided and abetted by myths that both hide and justify their totalitarian manipulation. And that is exactly what is happening here, and I have covered it in hours and hours and hours on the religion of mystery Babylon, the secret societies, the fraternal organizations, all of which at the highest levels are known as the Illuminati. The goal is a utopian world socialist government. One government, one religion, secular humanism, and the mob, that's you, completely controlled from birth to death, every day, 24 hours a day, every week, every month, every year, always. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, and God bless you all.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door. Hey, hi. Something's not right.
Throw out your arms.
And I'm from the IRS with a power to tax. If you've got a complaint, send us a fax.
Get out of this house. Serve your guns. Give me your gold. The federal way if you want to come home. That's the good stuff and do what you're told.
I'm William Cooper, and you've been listening to The Hour of the Time. Today's broadcast was an article entitled A Nation of Cowards by Jeffrey R. Snyder, taken from The Public Interest, Fall 1993, which is the quarterly journal of opinion published by National Affairs, Incorporated. We will continue with the rest of this article in tomorrow's broadcast.
And Clinton saying, take the mark in your right hand. While we're all dancing to the drums of uproar, right? Clinton's preparing it for another huge tax hike.
Order
out of chaos, depression, inflation, create the panic and rape the nation.
Order.
Crisis creation. Incite black and white program agitation.
Dominic Smith, you're surrounded by the UN in white and gray, the ATM in black, from the One World Order.
But it's not new. Iron Mountain, computer beasts, and cattle mutilation. Black projects, UFOs, and weird genetic combinations. The Nazi doctors didn't die. Come on, get him. They came here with the OSS through Operation Paperclip.
This is the Voice of Freedom. Please note, ladies and gentlemen, that The Hour of the Time will rerun nightly at 8 Pacific, 11 Eastern. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.
This is my daddy station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a nonprofit community service.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to help yourselves and help the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network continue to expand its programming until we reach the break-even point or 24 hours a day worldwide, then you need to call Southwest International Trading right now. Help protect at least a part of your assets. 1-800-295-2432. That's 1-800-295-2432. And ask how you can obtain the Economic Survival Pack number 1, which contains 1 1/10 ounce gold eagle, 1 British gold sovereign, 1 1/2 roll of silver eagle dollars, and 1 roll of what are known as junk dimes. Nothing junk about them. They're 90% silver, unlike that counterfeit phony brass stuff that you've got in your pocket right now that goes along with that counterfeit Federal Reserve note, which isn't even a note, just a piece of paper. If you don't believe me, plop a $20 bill on your kitchen table alongside a $100 bill and a $1 bill, and I dare you to tell me the difference between the three. You can't do it. They're just paper. They're worth nothing. In fact, the truth is, they're worth only what a nation of fools continue to accept as their worth. And you saw that demonstrated the other day when the stock market took its second most precipitous fall in its history, when Japan announced that if the United States didn't stabilize its currency exchange, Japan would sell United States bonds and purchase gold. Why do you think they said they'd purchase gold, ladies and gentlemen? Because what I've been telling you, what Stephen Jacobson has been teaching you, what everybody who really understands the true meaning of money has been trying to tell you for years, is right, right on the money, ladies and gentlemen. Also, we can save you some money on your phone bill. Whatever your long-distance carrier is now, if you're paying more than 10 cents a minute, ladies and gentlemen, we can save you money. Call our office between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. tomorrow, or any day of the week, as a matter of fact. Talk to Connie. Remember, our office is only open from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, which is the same as Pacific Daylight Time. Talk to Connie. Tell her what you're paying per minute with your long-distance carrier. And if it's more than 10 cents a minute, we can save you money. Doesn't cost you a thing. There are no fees involved, nothing whatsoever. All you have to do is switch your carrier, and we can do that for you. Okay, folks, so give us a call at 520-333-4578. That's 520.